The U.S. has focused much of its anti-terrorism plan on wiping out ISIS wherever the group and its leaders may be, from Iraq to Syria to Yemen. That emphasis has concerned a lot of observers who are wondering whether that decision has weakened overall U.S. policy in some ways, even morally. Journalist Anand Gopal has spent time recently on the ground in Syria and Iraq, reporting on ISIS and the refugee crisis. He's here to talk with us about that, as is John Carlson, Associate Director for ASU's Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict. Anand, I'll start with you. What did you see in the current situation in Syria?
Yeah, the situation in Syria on the ground, unfortunately, hasn't improved over the last couple of years. The latest is that the regime of Bashar al-Assad is essentially winning this five-year war. The rebels have lost a lot of territory. The nationalist rebels, who are usually called the Free Syrian Army, they've gotten weaker and weaker. Al-Qaeda, or the group that's associated with Al-Qaeda, has gotten much stronger. The country's now basically in a de facto partition between Kurdish forces, Turkish-backed forces, Al-Qaeda, and the regime.
You were recently in Iraq as well. In Mosul, can you give us an idea of what's going on there?
Yeah, I spent some time in Mosul to report on the operations right now. And at this point, about half the city has been liberated from ISIS. The other half, which is sort of the older part of the city, is still under ISIS control. And there's an extraordinary level of human suffering right now. People who are being caught in the crossfire. On the one hand, you have ISIS, which has booby-trapped buildings. They have snipers on the roofs of places. They're basically shooting to kill. They have drones now, which are attacking civilians. On the other hand, you have various air forces, the coalition air force and others, which are dropping bombs, and many people have been killed in these attacks. The area that's under control of ISIS now in the western edge of the city is the part of the city that has tightly packed houses. You know, you drop a bomb there and you're going to take out four or five at one time. So I think we're going to see, unfortunately, even more carnage in the coming months.
One philosophical question. When it comes to the moral situation, when it comes to U.S. involvement, how drastically has that changed when we go from big known leaders, almost strongmen in a sense, to something completely different?
Well, I think it's easy to look at the situation and see that there was stability before and there's no stability now. But at the same time, I think there's a big difference between Iraq and Syria and Libya, because the key here is that Syrians and Libyans themselves rose up to try to overthrow the dictatorship. At its core, it was a movement for freedom, for dignity, for democracy. Then the question becomes, how do we in the international community support them in doing that? And that's a very different question than Iraq, which was as horrible as the dictatorship was there. It wasn't an uprising. There wasn't a mass movement there that we could have supported. And I think that partly explains what happened afterwards in Iraq, was that you're going into a country that, without knowing what's actually happening there and without really supporting indigenous forces, and it's been chaos ever since there.
And John, U.S. policy has been, we look at the drastic change with the Trump administration coming in, and it's forced a lot of Americans to ask really tough questions. How do we feel about refugees? How do we feel about immigrants, undocumented or otherwise? When you think about those questions and how U.S. policy is looking at that, what sort of ground are we on right now when it comes to those?
Well, I think it's important to recognize where the United States bears some direct responsibility and has some complicity in the situation on the ground. The foothold that ISIS has established in Syria first began in Iraq, and that couldn't have happened, of course, without the overthrow of Saddam Hussein and the establishment of ISIS and the caliphate there in Iraq. So we have to think in these long terms to understand where we could either respond to conditions that we have helped to create or, as we generally have done in American foreign policy, respond to those who are in need, refugees, asylum seekers, et cetera. And certainly those in Syria right now are among the worst situation that we've seen in recent years.
John, what's the moral responsibility of the U.S. when it comes to this? Is there a danger of sort of talking out of both sides of our mouth?
There is a danger that's of talking about out of both sides of our mouths, but I guess it would be fair to say that American values are the moral backbone of our body politic. And I think that spine has been weakened by a couple different forces. On the one hand, we've seen under Syrian policy, particularly under the previous administration, a failure to live up to certain ideals, not to espouse to freedom and democracy, but to live up to those claims. I mean, Barack Obama was very eloquent about these. And if there is any democratic movement where we had some opportunity to really get behind and support the people who were protesting, demonstrating nonviolently, who were crushed by a violent dictator. We missed several opportunities in Syria along the way over the years to take a stand. Now I think our concern is not so much a failure to live up to those ideals, but maybe even a failure to espouse the ideals altogether.
Anna, let me ask you about Russia, because of course that is in the news every day as it relates to the Trump administration. And there's some talk that, well, this is good to have a good relationship with Russia because they can help us crush ISIS. Where do you rest on that one when it comes to Russia's role and U.S. relationship and going forward and whether that could affect ISIS?
Well, I think the problem right now under the current administration and under Obama has been a singular, almost obsessive focus on ISIS and counterterrorism to the exclusion of pretty much everything else. And that's what we see shaping Syrian policy, which is to say that there's actually a de facto alliance, and there has been, with Russia on Syria, which is to say the U.S. will not touch the Assad regime, will not really substantively support the anti-Assad rebels and focus just on ISIS. And what we've seen is basically that's allowing Assad to win. And so we're attacking his enemies for him. And if you talk to Syrians, actually, Assad has killed 9-10 times more Syrians than ISIS has. And for Syrians, the number one enemy is the regime, is a dictatorship, is not ISIS.
Going back to the question of the difference between what Libya and Syria and Iraq, certainly, is there a growing philosophy? Does the Trump administration philosophy seem to be one that is more of, we hear about nationalism, or we hear about isolationism, which is in this case probably not going to happen, but it's been floated. Does this seem like a real step back from the standpoint of we'd rather have someone like Assad because then he can sort of make his mess and clean up his own mess and we're not involved?
I think what we see, as John mentioned, is a change in the rhetoric, which is important in and of itself. I would say that the Obama administration would rather have Assad in power than have a power vacuum or have rebels in power. And that's been the policy, essentially. Every time rebels have tried to press to Damascus, the U.S. and its allies, Jordan and Saudi Arabia, have cut off funding, cut off arms. What we see now is a continuation of that policy, but also making that policy into a virtue, in a sense, you know, actually talking about it rhetorically.
And how much of that has to do with what happened on 9/11? It does seem that there's been a dramatic shift in many people who feel like because of that terrible day, that the U.S., whether it's waterboarding or whatever, has to, in order to defeat these people, we have to be just as nasty as we think they are. Has that really occurred even in policy as far as how the U.S. has carried things out?
Well, absolutely. The war on terror is basically what's framed American foreign policy in the Middle East for the last 15 years. You know, it's interesting if you look at it, if you talk to Iraqis and look, take it from their point of view, and going back to what something John said about the culpability, the moral culpability that the United States has, back to 1991, during the Gulf War, George H.W. Bush called for Iraqis to rise up against their dictator and said that the U.S. will support them. They did rise up, and the U.S. did not support them. They were crushed in a bloodbath. Then in the mid-90s, the U.N., mostly through U.S. pressure, put in the sanctions regime. Madeleine Albright was asked, probably a million kids have died from this sanctions regime. Is it worth it? And she said yes. Then you go to 2003, where the U.S. has invaded the country and led to this unending chaos. Mm-hmm. From the point of view of Iraqis, it feels as if the United States has never really actually cared about Iraqis, and it's always pursued its own interests. What's different now is the way in which it talks about that.
Are we seeing a contradiction now as we see, and how could that affect policy, how could that affect the moral high ground when we have members of the Senate almost so blatantly and obviously disagreeing with Trump administration policy on a lot of things, whether they actually hold back money or funding or whatever it may be, when you have McCain, Graham, whoever, saying these things, does that send a strange message internationally as well when, okay, well, the policy is really enacted by the president and yet the Senate seems to disagree with what he's trying to do?
Well, I can tell you that when your commander-in-chief sort of abdicates the throne of moral authority that he is supposed to hold, that does send a message throughout the world. And thankfully, there are senators and others who are reminding the world, Americans, including the president, that there are certain limits, there are certain values, there are certain kinds of norms that have to be preserved. I mean, the case of torture is a perfect example. I mean, you know, Trump on the campaign trail famously said, well, torture works. We're going to bring back waterboarding and a whole lot worse. As if it's simply a decision that he can make. And he's sort of preserved that sense of prerogative by saying, well, General Mattis has convinced me that he doesn't think it works, as though we're not going to exercise it. Well, this is a real problem. I mean, the reason that you don't do it is multiple. One is it's against the law, and Congress has passed laws that prohibit it. In addition to the congressional and legal limits, there are moral limits.
So where does the U.S. go from here? Is this one of these things where Donald Trump throws his rhetoric out, and yet U.S. policy does not really follow what his rhetoric is? How much time do we have, and how much time do the people of Syria have? Could the timing be worse?
Well, yeah, I'm worried that what we're seeing essentially is an extension of Obama's policies in Iraq and Syria. So I think the rhetoric will be there, but on the ground, what we're seeing is a continuation of it, and it's a continuation of a really deeply failed policy that spawned this refugee crisis. And that doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. In Syria, what we're seeing is the regime is winning. And that is not a good thing. You know, that's not a good thing for people living there. That's not a good thing for humanitarian reasons. That's only going to continue. And what we have is essentially the world powers either allowing it to happen or being somewhat complicit in it. So I'm concerned that we don't have a lot of time, especially for Syrians. They don't have a lot of time to turn this thing around. It may even be too late, to be honest, to turn this thing around.
Anand Gopal is a journalist who has reported from Syria and Iraq and has recently joined ASU as an assistant research professor. I also spoke with John Carlson, who is associate director for ASU's Center for the Study of Religion and Conflict.